And we're back. You're listening to Your Health Connection on 91.9 FM WCLK. And today's program, we are talking about eating well and staying active while you're battling cancer. This program provides information, education, awareness, and a little bit of inspiration. And we've got a little bit of all of that today. Right before we went into the break, we were talking about exercise and physical activity. And it seems like cancer survivors are asking those kinds of questions. They're wanting to find out how much they can do in terms of physical activity and exercise. Joan, can one exercise too much?
Of course one can exercise too much, although there are people who would say you can't, but there are people who go just too far. I was just thinking of a group of my patients, which are breast cancer survivors who've had reconstructive surgery. Reconstructive surgery can go on for almost a year, and those people really need to be careful with doing core exercises, upper body strengthening exercises, because they can actually create more problems than it's worth. However, they can easily work on a treadmill. They can do yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Yoga is very, very popular with the breast cancer population. And they can also use reclining bikes, et cetera. We do have some medications that cause peripheral neuropathies that we do use with people, and they get numbness and tingling, kind of like the diabetic neuropathies that patients get, but they get it actually from the medication. And for the first 2 years after treatment, they really do have some problems feeling their feet, feeling their fingers, knowing where their feet are placed, and those people shouldn't go on a treadmill. So we do try to keep up with what individual patients can do or can't do. And they very often want information on that. And we work with our coaches at our local WISE to educate them on what different survivors need.
Sure. We want to remind you that you can call in. We're taking your questions live at 404-880-9255, or you can tweet us at CCRTD. You might have a question for nurse practitioner Joan, or you might have a similar story to AJ. I want to ask you, Joan, if I know that there are some people who have gone through treatment and they get back to work. Are there some exercises that people can do at their desks? You know, are there certain types of exercises that people can do at home that are, you know, minimally invasive?
Walk.
Just
walk.
Okay.
If you can walk three days a week for even a half an hour, or a half an hour every day, or 60 minutes, that's as good as we can get. Most people can walk. They can, instead of taking the stairs at work, walk up the maybe not walk up the stairs, especially right after treatment, but walk down the stairs.
Sure.
Just make some small changes, and you actually be very surprised. Park a little bit further away from where your workplace is. Exercises at work, I'm not an expert at doing that. I guess you could do running in place.
Walk is good.
Yeah, walking. It's hard to believe that walking is as powerful as it is. And it doesn't have to be a race walk. It can be a slow walk.
Mm-hmm.
It has an excellent cardio. And it just doesn't have benefits for cancer. My patients who are survivors have the rest of their lives to live. And during that lifespan, they're going to have problems with hypertension. They come to us. I mean, you were young when you were diagnosed. That's not the typical person. The typical person who's diagnosed with a cancer, any cancer, let's just say across the board, is over the age of 55. So they come to me already with obesity. They have hypertension. I mean, just about everybody has a little bit of hypertension here, and there's some have diabetes. So they come with all of these things, and then we do more to them, and then we have to recover even further. And just changing the way that some of them come smoking.
Mm.
A lot of them, you know, no, some, not a lot of them, but some of them drink. So some of the conversations that you have to have for long-term survivorship, not just from their cancer itself, but for the rest of their lives from heart disease, et cetera. We have a whole cardio-oncology program that we worked up where we send people who have two or three risk factors for developing heart disease for risk assessment. Now, sometimes we give medications that affect the heart. Sometimes we give radiation that can affect the way that the heart functions, such as his radiation affected the function of his thyroid. So these people are more than their cancer, and that's really a new philosophy. And it's very hard to convince people on that. But, you know, I'm really interested in I want to make sure they had their colonoscopy if they had breast cancer, or if they had one of my patients today had rectal cancer. I want to make sure she's had her mammograms, because we don't want them to get a second cancer because we're focusing on what they have. And some people say, I never did it because I thought I was going to die of breast cancer, so I didn't bother to get a colonoscopy, and then they wind up with colon cancer. The more survivors we have, the more cancers we're going to see in those survivors because they're just living longer. So we need to be careful about all of that.
So let's talk about living longer. It sounds like nutrition and exercise help people feel better. Mm-hmm. But is there any truth to some of the studies that have been done that say that people actually live longer?
Yes, they do. The American Cancer Society published a huge paper in 2012 that looked at the benefits of physical activity and nutrition and weight control in multiple cancers. And the greatest benefit we saw to all of that was in prostate cancer survivors. There was almost a 55% increase in long-term survivorship in prostate cancer patients who did exactly what we said, maintain their weight, exercise on a regular basis. They also, there's a lot of information on the prevention of cancer. You're less likely to get cancer if you don't have a sedentary lifestyle. The number one cause of cancer and has been touted over the years is smoking. I mean, it causes heart disease and it causes other things, but there's a lot of smoking-related cancers. But there are people who believe very strongly that with the next group of people that we're studying through the American Cancer Society, we'll probably see sedentary lifestyle as being the number one cause of cancer. We're going to be able to pull that in. Those are the people that we're going to see more frequently. You know, it doesn't guarantee anything. Nothing's a guarantee in life. You get those jock women who come in who exercise their entire life and they still get breast cancer and they don't know why, but they also do really well when they're treated for their breast cancer, or somebody like you who comes in really good shape. Mm-hmm. Those are the easier people to see. We don't see a lot of that. I was explaining to you that probably only about 2% of breast cancers are diagnosed before the age of 40. We tend to remember them because they're young and they have little kids, and there's a little bit more dramatic to all of that. But in reality, the younger people seem to do very well who are in really good shape. People who come in good shape tend to go out in good shape. Okay. Even with the kind of treatment you got, you still were in good enough shape, which is really great.
AJ, we talked about physical activity and exercise with you. What about diet? Did you find yourself changing your diet, or are there groups of foods that you eat now that you didn't eat prior to the diagnosis?
So most of my lifestyle change was right in that maybe 2 or 3 years after. It's been 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And I say that to say that I've gotten lazy again. But I still work out more and I pay more attention, right? Mm-hmm. And I have, along with my regular diet, I have like the green superfood powder that's like a full serving of the vegetables in one serving. So there's that piece, but absolutely I'm more conscientious now of my body in general, right? So just working out, again, not as much as I like to, because I think I'm starting January 1st, I'm going to. There you go.
Well, the plant-based diet is, and a lot of people are using supplements for that. We would prefer people used vegetables.
Sure.
Because there's a lot more fiber, et cetera, in that. But, you know, plant-based diet is probably the biggest contributor. You know, cut out some of the red food. I mean, I used to eat red meat my entire life. Every meal we ate red meat. And now I eat fish several times per week. So you eliminate, you make small changes. Mm-hmm. Our society is changing, too. But you can't get all the vitamins and minerals that you need from pills or supplements. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not bad to do that once in a while, maybe one meal a day, use that for your supplement. But to try and get all of your vitamins, your minerals, and your calories from your regular food that you eat.
Absolutely. And that's what I do. But I think, again, it's more from some of the things that I'm doing. Because
you don't like peas?
No, I do. I was raised by my grandmother, right?
Oh, yeah. So you ate lots of greens. Yeah, we know.
In Louisiana.
In Louisiana, yeah. My grandmother made sure that we ate everything.
With a lot of salt in it, probably, though.
With a lot of salt and a lot of pork. And
and a lot of love.
And a lot of love. Yeah. And a lot of flavor. Yeah. Most importantly, flavor. But yeah. So I have that and, you know, the vegetables. But that's kind of a supplemental thing. So it's mm-hmm. more of an additive. But you're absolutely right.
The general diet. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of people out there selling lots of supplements. We discussed this mm-hmm. earlier mm-hmm. For lots and lots of money. And supplements are okay. But we generally tell people, especially when they're undergoing cancer therapy, to start off with If you want to take a vitamin, that's fine. But you should get most of your vitamins and your supplements through your foodie.
Mm-hmm. So there's no data out there, really, that supports not strong certain data. Supplements.
Mm-hmm. Or not eating sugar, or there's lots of things out there. You're going to get, you know, you feed the cancer with sugar. And I had a patient with head and neck cancer, a young woman who came in, and she was starving. Her daughter had her on some kind of a strict diet, and she was finished with treatment, and she was absolutely hungry as can be. And the daughter was, like, controlling everything. And I said, go eat a piece of cheesecake.
Oh, wow.
And she went on the way home. She went to Whole Foods and got a piece of cheesecake. You know, it's like, don't deny yourself something you absolutely want to have. Try to, you know, everything in moderation. You can have a piece of cheesecake, but don't eat it every day or three times a day. The entire world should be in moderation. Same thing with alcohol. You know, we can't tell people completely, we don't want people, you know, falling down drunk from alcohol. That's not a good thing in survivorship. You know, we don't want people getting their calories for the day out of alcohol either. But, you know, using one glass of wine in the evenings is, you know, people, everything is moderation. Nothing far to the left, nothing far to the right, everything kind of down the middle, the way your grandmother brought you up.
Mm-hmm. We like moderation. That's
right.
It's in the good book.
Grandma's
name. And we like soul food.
That's right.
And true enough, my sister was diagnosed with diabetes a few years back, and because she's a health nut and did everything by the book and just...
She was never going to get it.
Right.
Right. And she
walks. She eats nothing but fruit and nuts, and she's a health junkie. And she was so frightened one day, and she came back from the doctor, and she said, I don't know what to do. He said, stop by McDonald's and get a cheeseburger. She said, I don't even eat that stuff.
I love this.
But she went to McDonald's, and she got a cheeseburger, and she said hilarious. It was wonderful.
And she doesn't need another one now for 6 months.
And she won't. So we love moderation. Joan, in your work, can you speak to any patterns that you perhaps have seen within the African-American culture? Anything specific that you see often that you can say, okay, I see a certain age group that are African-American women, anything with diet or nutrition or exercise, any kind of pattern that you see?
I would say that everybody has patterns. I mean, there are patterns with every society that we have, every racial group, every group that's out there. We see people are not more likely, if they're African-American, to develop a cancer. But we do know, because of the access of health care, that they may come to us later. Mm-hmm. So they may already be deconditioned by the time they get to us, and they may have already stopped exercising and not eating as well. It's very, very difficult to fight that too, plus fight the fact that you have to fight the cancer. So we need to build them up. I'm sure that the nutritionist that you spoke to at Emory, she's still there, and she's great, and her big thing is moderate. I've learned more from her. I go to her cooking classes, and she tries to teach people to use different kinds of foods and look at things differently. But there's a lot of cultural.
Sure.
You know, trying to tell somebody you can't eat, you know, that you can't eat pork with your greens, or that doesn't make any sense either. We have to learn to live with all of that. We also can not get people who've never exercised to go exercise three times per week.
Right.
You know, that's setting them up for failure. So we've had the Komen Foundation has given us some funds in the past to actually give scholarships out to the YMCAs, and it has changed people's lives completely, because many of our patients can't afford. By the time you finish with cancer therapy, very often you've used every bit of your monies, et cetera, and the thought of paying $40 a month for an exercise, that's just not within their realm. But it can change people completely. I have people coming back from the last group of people that we sent out saying, you changed my life completely. I don't go to the Y anymore because I can't afford it. But before I left, they told me, you know, do this, this, and this. So you see small changes in people's lives. And I think that's what you see. When I see somebody coming back to me who we've probably cured and they've made changes in their lives, it makes a big difference.
Wonderful.
A big difference.
Don't forget to call us. We're here waiting for your calls live. We'll accept your call if you have a question, comment, 404-880-9255, or you can tweet us at CCRTD. Joan, another question. Is there a suggestion that nutrition could potentially prevent reoccurrence of a cancer like breast cancer?
Well, I think it's more the fact that you keep a lean body mass,
okay,
and exercise. That's basically. But even in the absence of lean body mass, exercise itself provides a certain protection. There were studies that didn't measure how much people weighed, et cetera. They just looked at how much they changed their activity levels, and that made a huge difference in their long-term survivorship. But some of our patients, like yourself, have 50 years to live. So if we can make a small change in their life now, okay, mm-hmm. then we can certainly know that in the long term. People who have one cancer do run the risk of developing a secondary cancer at a higher rate. That's just statistically the facts. So we want to make sure that people are protected in every way. So even if your exercise is not going to prevent you necessarily from head and neck, and we don't have a lot of head and neck data, it will benefit you in hopefully preventing you from getting colon cancer as long as you have your colon cancer screening, et cetera, and also breast cancer. So, and prostate cancer. There's a lot of work going on into prostate cancer right now. So we're looking at those people. So things are changing.
Yes, they are. AJ, I've got a great question for you when we come back from a quick break. If you're listening, don't forget you can tweet us live at CCRTD and you can call us 404-880-9255. AJ Joyner and Joan Giblin.
I'm Dr. Kimberly Davis with the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at Clark Atlanta University. Prostate cancer often has no early warning signs or symptoms, but screening can detect the cancer in its earliest stages when it is most curable. The key is to know your numbers. Annual testing with the prostate-specific antigen test, or PSA, can lead to early detection and cancer confined to the prostate that has a significantly higher cure rate. Know what your PSA number is every year. Do not accept your PSA is normal. Ask for the actual number. This might be the most important number of your life. For more information, contact the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at 404-880-6878. Or email us at cancerinfo@cau.edu. This message has been brought to you by the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at Clark Atlanta University.